great football team with a lot of moral fiber and a lot of character, and they showed it.
Shout, a Buffalo football podcast hosted by Matt Perino and Ryan Talbot.
No place else you'd rather be than right here, right now. When it's too tough for them, it's just right.
Presented by Syracuse.com and NYUP.com.
The Bills make me wanna.
What is up, everybody? Welcome into the Monday edition of Shout, a Buffalo Bills football podcast. It is draft week. That means we are supercharging the Shout podcast this week. We are going to have an episode for every single day of draft week, Ryan. We're starting today. Me and you are going to kick things off. We're going to be joined by Antoine Staley tomorrow. Me and him, we'll chop it up for a little bit. Our big final live mock draft. We're super excited about this. We have Justin Mello from the Draft Network, our guy Carl Jones from Rochester. We'll do the mock draft on Wednesday, and then it's show every single night after at the end of the draft. Are you ready? Are you ready, Ryan Talbot?
I am beyond ready. This is one of my favorite weeks of the year, Matt Perino. I've always loved draft week. I mean, going back to even college days, this was always lined up with spring weekend at St. Bonaventure, and that's like the big party weekend. I would still kind of duck away for a little while to go watch the draft, go see who, you know, the Bills and everyone was taking. So this is always one of my favorite times of the year.
A lot of Buffalo sports fans are talking about Lindy Ruff getting rehired as the Buffalo Sabres head coach right now. You're going to find exactly zero talk about that on this podcast. So if you're looking to kind of chat up the addition, I know my wife was super excited about it. I mean, that was her glory days back when Lindy was the head coach. So she's excited about it. But it is all draft all the time. And I want to start with Ryan, your 7-round mock draft that dropped at the website last night, Syracuse.com, NewYorkUpstate.com. You can head over to the site and check it out right now. I want you to take us through your logic here, because the headline is The Buffalo Bills double dip early at wide receiver after trade down in 7-round mock draft. Talk us through what you did.
Yeah, so, you know, one, I let the board play out. I got to pick 28, and there were some enticing names on the board. A.D. Mitchell, wide receiver out of Texas, Kool-Aid McKinstry, cornerback out of Alabama. Those are the top two names that were on the board. But there were quite a few other wide receivers. There was still Troy Franklin. There was still Ladd McConkey. And, you know, going into this, I've been reading up on different teams that want to trade up. And, you know, to your credit, you had it in your last mock draft with the Washington Commanders trying to trade back into round one to get an offensive tackle. So sure enough, two tackles were on the board at that point in time. And I used the mock draft machine using the Rich Hill trade value chart and acquired two day two picks for pick 28, 128, and then one of the picks in the 160s there, 163. So in doing so, the Bills suddenly were in a good spot to have three picks there in that, you know, the top 90 range, see what they could get out of that. And I kind of liked the haul at the end of the day, because when I moved back to number 36, Matt, Ladd McConkey was still there.
So you move back, you let the Commanders come up and get a tackle, and then pick number 36, Ladd McConkey, who has, as you noted here, mentioned on the Up and Adam show, has spent a ton of time with the Bills during the draft process. The one thing here is, so I love the pick. I love the value at 36 for McConkey. I think that if you put all these receivers together, to me, doesn't it feel like McConkey kind of has, like, if you take the top four out and you're sitting here saying, okay, you can't get up into range to get Brian Thomas Jr. or any of the top three. So now you're talking about the next three or four, whatever that ends up looking like. And it's probably a little bit different for everybody. But for me, McConkey almost feels like he has the highest floor and the most like potential versatility. Like, I feel like if you draft Xavier Worthy out of Texas, you're getting a specific kind of receiver that I think like teams are going to use a specific way. Same thing with A.D. Mitchell, and maybe the ceiling might be a little bit higher for those guys, but I feel like you went with a guy that I think comes in and has the best shot of being able to understand the Bills offense right away and finding a role in it. And I think it's interesting because a lot of people think that McConkey is a potentially a slot only at the next level. I think there's a lot of evaluators that would argue that he could play on the boundary. But I also think people should start getting comfortable with the idea that the Bills, I think, view Khalil Shakir a little bit differently than how they even used him at the end of last season. And I make that assertion based on what Brandon Bean said last week, where it's like, they don't feel like they have to fill this role. Otherwise they're not going to have success in their offense. I think they believe in other guys that are already on the roster. And I think it's about adding guys that fit in, that can make plays, that can fit into, you know, what they're missing.
Yeah, and I looked at the comments that Brandon Bean made last week. He said, you know, they're looking for players who are smart, versatile, selfless, and can make plays that their skill set allows them to make. And, you know, McConkey just kind of makes a ton of sense there. You can play him inside and outside. He did both at Georgia. He has that deep speed to get open and make big plays down the field. Savvy route runner. Everything pretty much checks every box for me. And in a way, he kind of reminds me a little bit of Dalton Kincaid in the respect that I almost wonder if the Bills didn't bring him in for a 30 visit because they like him the way that they liked Dalton Kincaid last year. Mm-hmm. Dalton Kincaid was their last formal interview at the Combine. He was a Zoom interview the week of or the week before the draft. They did their due diligence, but they're a little quieter about it. And I know McConkey went on Up and Adams and said, yeah, I've met with him a few times, but there's been no reported 30 visit. So maybe trying to keep these other teams off the scent. I think McConkey, whether it's at 28 or 36, could be their guy.
So the one thing that I would, maybe bring up to talk about here, and we'll get to the super chat here in a moment from Charles Dorn. I'm McConkey. Ryan, I think there's a world we live in where he doesn't make it to 36. So I think this is like best case scenario, like getting past like San Francisco. I've seen him mock there quite a bit. Getting past the Chiefs. I know that, you know, both of those teams could probably go offensive line. You know, I think that both teams could kind of add maybe a cornerback depending on, you know, who's there at the end of the first round. I know Nate Wiggins out of Clemson. He's been in that range pretty normally or regularly, I should say. But I think McConkey getting to 36 is like, I think that's the one nervous part of it. If you're the Bills and you have him, you know, it graded higher than say a Xavier Leggett or AD Mitchell or Xavier Worthy or whatever comedy is Keon Coleman. And you're like, okay, we really want McConkey, but we want to move back and we add picks. But if we move back and McConkey's off the board and we have to pick from that pool, we're taking a step back and we really need that pick. I don't know, man. I think that's a dangerous gamble, but at the same time, I'm all in on the idea of adding more capital. Number one, another pick in the top 100, I think, is a home run. And then also, I think they should try to add more capital so they can be aggressive and move up in the second and third round if they need to.
Yeah, that's just it. It gives you that flexibility to move up if there's another player that you covet. And, you know, Brandon Bean already said there's not 28 guys with a first round grade. So highly unlikely that they're going to get into round two and be able to get another player at pick 60 that they have a first round grade on. But if they have some picks there that they can work with, they can move up from 60 into the 40s. And maybe a guy falls like an Osiris Torrance did 1 year ago that the Bills thought highly of and had a high grade on. It can happen. It's not likely to happen in terms of the first round grades, but they could also get one of their top second round targets. So in a draft where I feel like the Bills have to hit a few home runs, it would be good to be able to trade back and then have that those extra picks where they could then have that wiggle room to move around a little bit.
They won't have a lot of wiggle room to move around if they trade up to the top 10, like our super chatter Charles Dom, or should I say Dorn? Is it Dom? Is it Dorn? I can't really tell.
I think Dorn.
Dorn, there we go. The move up to the top 10. To me, it depends on where you want to go. And there's also a scenario that plays out where the three top receivers are gone within the first seven picks. I mean, you know, the Titans could take one, the Giants could take one, the Chargers could take one, the Cardinals could take one. I mean, in those four picks, by the time we get to seven, there's a world where all three of those guys are gone. So I think to get up in that range is going to be number one, way too costly for Brandon Beane to even consider a move up there. And then you start getting to 8, 9, 10, where it gets a little bit more interesting. And the trouble there is 10 is the Jets, and you're probably not going to pull off a deal with them unless you absolutely blow their doors off. And then it's about like the Chicago Bears. And I see a world we live in. And I know I keep saying a world we live in, but where the Bills can get up to that spot. To me, that's like the spot that if they're looking for one of those guys, but it's got to be the right guy. Do they have Neighbors and Odunze? Do they have them graded out similarly? Is it one of those guys or bust? Is it a specific guy or bust? All those things kind of play into it. And I just think that in a draft where, you know, you have some needs, and we're going to talk about a player in a second on the defensive side of the ball, a couple players on the defensive side of the ball that I think are interesting, that I don't think you have to sell the farm to go up and get one player. I believe Beane in what he said last week, where this offense could still be successful without a prototypical number one wide receiver. Mike Florio, I watched his segment after that, and he was kind of calling BS there, kind of, you know, making it seem like it's a smokescreen. I don't know. I don't think you move on from Stephon Diggs sitting there at 28 and probably not wanting to sell the farm and watch them go and sell the farm. We can look, talk about different things and what that could potentially look like. Maybe not even a draft pick, maybe a trade for a current player. We can talk about that. But I think getting up into the top 10, I've moved quite a bit of ways away from that. And I was actually considering it as I moved towards my final mock draft, going through that exercise one time. I think there's just too many pitfalls and too many roadblocks to getting that done.
And, you know, the draft is truly a crapshoot. You have scouts, you have all these guys in your front office, and they do great work throughout the year, but there is no perfect science. And I love the top three receivers in this draft class, but 2-3 years from now, we might look back and say, well, this one kind of busted or isn't what we expected. Kind of like what we, you know, what people say about Sammy Watkins, who was projected as the top receiver in that class. Sometimes it just doesn't work out for some reason. And if you do sell the farm to get up into the top 10, as our super chatter said, that leaves you with a lot less ammunition to address other needs that this team does have in their secondary on their defensive line. Then you are, you know, really relying on veterans to step up in that case, on defensive end, you know, Casey Tuhill to play, maybe a little bit more snaps than you wanted, your defensive tackle position, Austin Johnson playing a big role in that rotation. And then, you know, wondering who else is going to play behind DaQuan Jones and Ed Oliver. There are needs there, cornerback, sneaky need. So the Bills, I don't know if they're in that spot where they're just that one player away from being going over the top. It'd be great to get an Odunze, because I think he would be the one that'd be most likely to fall into that 9-10 range. Or 9, 8, 9, 11 range, because like you said, 10, the Jets aren't trading with the division rival. But I just don't see it.
Got a chat here from Ralph Wilson Sr., a regular in the YouTube comments. What's up, buddy? Have the Bills spent more time with Franklin than with McConkey? And I think trying to, you know, delineate that or figure that out is kind of challenging, because you know, Franklin comes in on a top 30 visit. So obviously they had him in their facility, were able to kind of learn a lot about them. But to me, Ryan, like the top 30s, and this is a little bit of a misnomer or something where I think fans, it's easy to kind of sit there and think that a top 30 leads to a team like, oh, they're bringing him for a top 30. They definitely want him. They're bringing him in because they want to learn as much. Sometimes they're bringing in guys on a top 30 visit to weed them out as well. See what they're going to be like at the airport, in the car, bringing them over to the facility. And I think in a case like Franklin, a guy like Keon Coleman, maybe they were satisfied with McConkey in the setting of the combine and the Senior Bowl and all those different places, to where they think he's got the smarts to come in and learn their system. Maybe they wanted to grill a couple of these other guys a little bit more. And I'm not saying that that's what they did, but I don't think we could sit here and say, oh, top 30 visit for Worthy, Coleman, and Franklin, so let's notch them above McConkey. It's complicated.
Right. And I get it. Franklin has met with the Bills a lot. Combine, private workout, 30 visit. However, sometimes these 30 visits are also medical related, Matt. And Franklin suffered a shoulder injury about 5 months ago. It could be for the medical team to kind of get a look at that, see how it's healing in the event that they do draft him at some point. Is he healing properly? Is he going to be able to Or is it something that they have to worry about down the road? So there's a lot that goes into the 30 visits. There's a lot that goes in, you know, the formal meetings at the combine. They don't get as many as they used to, but you still get to meet with a lot of prospects that you'd be looking at with those first three or four picks generally. And sometimes teams also use them for those late round picks as well. They've definitely done their homework on Troy Franklin, but like you said, that doesn't always correlate to this is someone that they like more than player X, Y, or Z.
I'm so interested in this spot and what the Bills do with the pick. Do they go wide receiver? Do they trade back? Do they trade up? Like, there's so many scenarios. It almost makes your mind spin a little bit because there's so much. And then every single day in the last couple of weeks here, it feels like there's a different kind of wrinkle to the saga. I mean, for a long time, I tweeted today, I was listening to The Ringer. They did a live mock a couple days ago. And I try to consume as much of those as I can. The Athletic Football Show does a good one. The Ringer does a good one. A couple of the other sites, CBS Sports. And it's good to go through these exercises and hear the way that teams talk about it. And it ended up being Adonai Mitchell that they took for the Bills in a trade up. And check out the trade terms here, Ryan. So instead of trading back and landing a guy like McConkey in their mock, they go up to the 22nd pick in a deal with the Eagles. They move up six spots and it costs 28 this year, 144 this year, one of their fourths, and a third round pick next year. What are your thoughts on that trade? And what are your thoughts on that trade for Mitchell? Because, I mean, there is such a variance on this guy. Like, I'm really trying to pinpoint, like, my thoughts on Mitchell. And I actually had the Bills take him at 28 in our live mock at Wingnuts a couple weeks ago. But even since then, the diabetes storyline that's kind of popped up here in the last couple of weeks and just what people are saying about what a team is going to get if they draft Mitchell, it's wild.
It is wild. And if the Bills actually did that as the trade was projected, it would tell me that they were a lot higher on Mitchell than I ever expected. Because Brandon Bean does not like parting with valuable picks, and a third round pick in next year's draft would be considered a very valuable pick to him. So to go from 28 to 22 and to have to give up a third next year, I know they have 2 seconds as of right now. It just doesn't seem like something he would do unless it was for a player that he absolutely loved. So that's what it would tell me. It would be like, this is the guy that they've been coveting all along. They like the frame, you know, the body frame. They like the mold of the player. They feel like they can work with him on controlling his blood sugar. They can work with him on the taking plays off, which has been another knock on him. He has the build where when he does block, he can be a good blocker. Can Sean McDermott and this coaching staff continually get that out of him? They would have to be sold on all of those points. But to me, yeah, that's what it would say. It would say this is the guy that they've been coveting to move up six spots and give away such a valuable pick in next year's draft.
Yeah, and I thought it was interesting, too. There was a clip from, I believe, Establish the Runs podcast where Adam Schefter was on there. And one of the things that he said he's hearing, because he was asked, like, what's like somebody that's going to go a lot earlier than you think? And he brought up Adonai Mitchell and he said, where people thinking he's going to go. And the host, Adam, I can't remember his name in the moment, but he said that right now between 25 and 32, the back end of the first round is where a lot of people are expecting him to go. And he said, oh yeah, he's going to go higher than that. So look, you start to think about it and it's like, okay, you might need to trade up if this is your guy to get up to 22 to get in front of a couple of teams that might want to. I mean, really, you might have to get up in front of Pittsburgh. I mean, if Thomas Jr. is off the board and Pittsburgh's sitting there at 20, they're never shy about taking a wide receiver that they're high on. And, you know, I went and I read, you know, Nate Tice, who I think does such a great job over at the Athletic Football Show. He has Adonai Mitchell as his number 24 prospect in this draft. And he says that he's one of his biggest risers, quick twitch athleticism, big receiver, and it shows on his film over and over again. True X wide receiver upside and can win down the field and in isolated situations. 4.35 speed to me at that size is more intriguing than Xavier Worthy's speed at his size. And I know that that's, listen, Xavier Worthy's speed is crazy. And like adding that to your offense, it's exciting. The Bills walk away from this draft at 28 and they draft Worthy. I think we're going to be sitting here on that Friday morning, you know, thinking about the possibilities of what that can mean for the deep part of the field. But I think Mitchell has a little bit more nuance and even more ceiling than Worthy, if that makes sense.
Yeah, he kind of has those freakish tendencies of a DK Metcalf, where a guy built like that shouldn't have that kind of speed, shouldn't be able to make the plays down the field that they do. You know, the physicality is definitely there. They look like they have the NFL type of body just coming into the league, which isn't always the case. There's a lot of pros to his game. I'm not denying that. But when you hear the potential stories about the effort, you hear the stories of, you know, the dings about the diabetes and not controlling the blood sugar. And listen, that's something that he probably is a young kid. He really does need to probably have a mentor or someone to kind of walk him through that, make him understand the importance of it. I'm not going to hold that against him as a major issue, but the effort can be, and that can turn a lot of coaches and regimes off from a player. But when you look at just the intangibles, when you look at the skill set, I get why he could go higher than pick 28.
Yeah. And I think, like, if the Bills make this pick on him or anybody else, that there's question marks about that kind of thing, you know, their people got the kind of, you know, check the kind of box that made them comfortable to make the pick. So I think that's, you know, I'm not going to belabor that point. Like, I know that that's one of the things that he kind of gets dinged at, but if the Bills take him, knowing how much the culture piece means to them, like, it almost makes you wonder, like, man, maybe that was a complete mischaracterization during the draft process. Cause there's a lot of times that kind of happens, like, where, you know, one little storyline kind of permeates, or a narrative permeates, and then you get to a point where you just, like, default believe that. And for me sitting here, like, listen, I like the draft. Like, I would consider you're much more invested in the draft process than I am. Right. Mm-hmm. Like, my part of the season is a little bit, it picks up more once the roster's built and we get into the season. Like, you love the draft, and we're a great pair that way. But for me, who'd I consider myself a little bit more of a casual draft fan as a reporter, like, everything that I know about Mitchell is just what I'm hearing from the people that are kind of, you know, pushing out all of these different evaluations. And so we'll see. We'll see what teams really think of these guys once we get to the draft in a couple of days.
And that's just it. There's going to be guys that go much earlier than we expect. Every year, Matt, there are players that fall not into even just round two, but into round three. And then you have those fan bases saying, draft so-and-so, draft so-and-so. And after the draft, you hear why a player falls, or you hear why a player went much higher than expected. It happens every year. There's going to be a handful of guys that go in that first half of the draft that we say, wow, wasn't expecting that. And some guys that fall, like Latu, for instance, is now being a betting favorite to be in the top 10, potentially. Maybe he will go to Atlanta. And then what does that mean for Dallas Turner? Where does he go, into the teens or something like that? So, you know, as we get closer and closer, there are guys that are moving up and down on a lot of these mock drafts.
Thank you so much for joining us on a Monday night. We are jam packed with shows all week long. We'll have you covered every single day of draft week. If you're watching on YouTube, hit that like button, subscribe to the channel as well. We're cooking on our way to 11K. You guys are awesome. Thank you so much for all your support on that platform. If you're watching live on X, welcome. Welcome to the party. We appreciate, you know, it's crazy. The numbers on X are going nuts lately, Ryan.
Yeah. X has been great. YouTube's going strong. I think we're getting closer and closer to 4 million all-time views on YouTube. So unbelievable. Facebook, I see the comments in here from Robert and Mary and some others. So all three platforms are representing tonight.
So let's go to the defensive side of the ball for a moment. Mm-hmm. There was a report today from Aaron Wilson, a really interesting prospect. I'll read it off for you guys. Florida State defensive tackle Braden Fisk, 6'4", 292 pounds, 4'7", 8" in the 40, 6 sacks last season, third team All-American. He had visits with the Steelers, the Raiders, and the Chargers, and per sources, extensive meetings with defensive line coaches for the Saints, Cardinals, and Bills. So somebody that definitely has perked the interest. I actually found a little feature that was done on Fisk right around the college football playoffs. And it is a really good look at his season, how he kind of jump-started it about halfway through. And you kind of learn a little bit about him. I'll tell you right now, in the 4.5-minute feature, it jumped off the screen to me like, this is a Bills guy, like a culture fit. If you look at his evaluation, so his scouting report, a nonstop motor, a little bit undersized. I'm more been pushing for the bigger, you know, one tech style defensive tackle in the draft. But man, if you land Fisk at a spot 60 or later, I think there is massive value there. I think there's some people that are arguing, like Aaron Wilson said, that maybe he's a back end of the first round kind of guy. I think of a guy like Brian Brisse from last year, where the medical stuff kind of pushed him down early in the process. He was going middle. I don't think Fisk was ever that high, but in that same range, we could be talking about a player. I think, you know, you got to start thinking about guys like this and guys like Cooper DeJean, the cornerback from Iowa, who we've talked quite a bit about. I don't know if necessarily in the first round, but somebody that's definitely on the Bills' radar.
And Fisk is that guy that I think could be a sneaky first round pick because of the talent, because the freakish, you know, athleticism for that size. I know he's more of a three tech, but, and the Bills have already have a great one there, but they rotate their defensive tackles a lot. And if he is someone that goes that high, I don't necessarily think he fits into the Bills' plans, but you're right. If he's sitting there in round two, he could be a guy that the Bills make a slight move up for, not even wait until 60. I think that the middle of the second round might be as late as he goes. So he would be a tough one for me to think the Bills could get, but they're definitely doing their homework on him in the event that either he falls or there's enough that they like about him where they decide he's someone that they want to move up for in round two.
Some of the smartest sports fans in sports are shout Buffalo Bills fans. And a lot of people in the comments, Daryl over on YouTube, would be a nice backup three tech behind Ed Oliver. And to me, like, that's his first year impact kind of style position, right? Like, he's a very, like, on the smaller side of defensive tackles. He's not going to be a run stuffer. He's not going to be somebody that you ask to play over the center. You're going to want him to be active and causing disruption in the backfield. But I do like the part of his scouting report where it's like equal part pass rusher and run defender. And, you know, he's somebody that if you go back to, I think it was the ACC title game, he had both big time sacks and big time tackles for a loss. He was just a chaos causer. And those are the kind of guys I think they want to try to add to their defensive line. And if you can get that somewhere in the second round, and, you know, maybe you trade back, maybe there's a scenario where you trade back and the first place you go is a guy like Fisk. It may be in the 40 range. I don't know if they'll be willing to trade back that far. But there's so much talent at wide receiver. And if maybe it's the other way, what we talked about early, maybe if you have Ladd in a bucket with six or seven different wide receivers that you have like equally graded, maybe you go back, add another pick in round two or round three. If you go back to 40, Ryan, like you probably go back to 40 and you probably add two twos and maybe a third going by the Rich Hill, depending on where it's kind of positioned. And then we're talking about four picks in the first 90. And you know me, man. Like, that's, to me, I want darts. I want to throw darts. I want to be able to be aggressive. And I really like the idea if that's the way that they went.
I think that's the main point. It is throwing darts in the draft. And the more darts that you throw on those high-end prospects, the more likely you're going to get a hit or two. If you sell the farm and move up into the top 10, like a previous shout listener or watcher mentioned, that's one dart and you better get the bullseye. If you're throwing three or four darts out there, there's more chances of hitting the spot that you're looking for, getting that player that you think can be a playmaker for your team and making a difference for your team. So I agree. If they do trade back and add extra assets on day two, it will be worthwhile for Buffalo.
We have so many great shout insiders on the text line, just throwing daily questions, commentary, back and forth. It's a great place to just talk about the draft, talk about the Bills. And right now you can become a shout text insider by texting 716-528-6727. 2-week free trial, $3.99 a month after that. And the shout text line is brought to you by Carrie C. Beyer, attorney with the law offices of Francis M. Litro, located at 237 Main Street in Buffalo, New York. If you or someone you know is seriously injured, give them a call, 716-852-1234, or check out LitroLaw.com. And speaking of the insiders, Ryan Talbot, let's go to the insiders. They, I asked them if there was anything they wanted us to talk about today, and we will start off with George Kovac, Two questions. First one, do you think the Bills make a play for Ayuk on draft night? Brandon Ayuk, 49ers wide receiver, who apparently is still in negotiations, his team with the 49ers. John Lynch came out today and said they want him to be a 49er for life, said all the right things. And usually that's, you know, maybe some smoke before a trade on draft day or whatever it ends up being. I love his skill set, but upcoming contract worries me a bit. To me, Ryan, that's where I'm at. Like the problem with adding a guy like Ayuk, adding a T. Higgins, in theory, it's great. But there's two problems. Number one, you're bringing in the kind of contract that I feel like you're actively working to shed. Like those are the kind of contracts that you don't really have the room for it. I think teams that are paying their quarterback have showed you that you have to find other ways to win. The Chiefs, the 49ers could do it last year with Deebo Samuel because they weren't paying their quarterback anything. So I think to bring in a guy like that, I think the way that you want to do it is to find someone that you could develop in the draft and really enjoy that 4 or 5 years of cost control. And you're just losing that by bringing in another contract where you have to put all those resources there.
Yeah, my buddy Rocco in the chat, big 49ers fan. I'm sure he wouldn't like to see Brandon Ayuk get traded. I don't see Brandon Ayuk getting traded, at least not to Buffalo, for the very reasons that you mentioned, Matt. They just moved away from a big contract in Stephon Diggs. And yes, Ayuk is several years younger than Stephon Diggs is right now, still entering the prime of his career and could end up being an excellent fit for Buffalo if they went that route. But right now, Josh Allen's contract is set to kind of balloon these next few years. And I know you can always extend the contract. You can make it so you can give him more money and move some parts around. But with the contract kind of ballooning these next few years, you want to have those rookie deals, develop these young players, especially guys where if you sit at 28 and you grab a receiver, then you have a fifth year option on that player. But or if you trade down and you get maybe two of your first three picks, that gives you two guys that you have for, you know, the foreseeable future on rookie deals that Josh Allen can throw to. You have Dalton Kincaid on a rookie deal for the next few years, James Cook for a few more years, because all those other pieces around Josh Allen, you want to keep them relatively cheap and have to pick and choose which guys to extend eventually to give out that big money so you don't find yourself in another situation where you have to move on and make a lot of tough decisions in an off season.
Brandon Bean did the hardest thing that a GM has to do when he found Josh Allen, when he drafted Josh Allen. You get the quarterback. To me, that buys you all kinds of time. At wide receiver, it's been a bit of a crapshoot, right? Like for every Gabe Davis that he's drafted, there's a Marquez Stevenson and Isaiah Hodgins, Ray McLeod. I mean, the list of wide receivers that Brandon Bean and his staff drafted.
Justin Shorter,
which I'm not putting him in there yet. We don't know enough about
him. It's too early.
But you're right. At this stage, he's done nothing. He couldn't even get on the field last year. So that's a fifth round pick that, you know, there's teams that are, you know, finding fifth round picks and having them, you know, make plays in their first season. You have to, if you're Brandon Bean now, transition. You have the quarterback. You have to make sure that you have the best ability to evaluate the wide receiver position. And the one good thing that I think if you're a Bills fan and where you can cling to hope that they're going to knock this draft out of the park, and I'm betting on that. Like if I'm a betting man, if I'm a bettor, I'm saying the Bills are going to come out of this draft with two good receivers because they have so much data now from their own operation to take in to evaluate. All right, what were the misses when we pulled the trigger? Now there's no data in the first 2 days, and that's a struggle. But there's a lot of data on day three, and there's a lot of data on who are the guys over the last 3 or 4 years that have hit on that they would have liked to have added to their room. You guys got guys like Drake London's of the world, the Chris Olaves, the Justin Jeffersons. I mean, all different parts of the draft in the first round. The Tank Dells, the Amon-Ra St. Browns. We talked about those. There's all these different players. How did they hit? What did the Bills think of them during the draft process? How are they applying all of that to this year's crop, a really talented crop where they should be able to find a few diamonds in there? And even on the later end, I sent out a string of texts today on I'm going through each position. I started with a wide receiver. Then I did edge rusher. I'm going to keep spinning it through. And for our insiders, if you have a specific player or position that you want me to focus on, I'm trying to find some off the radar kind of guys to start zeroing in on. One of those guys is Luke McCaffrey, day three guy that could be potentially a really interesting fit for the Bills. Like, I don't know if that's necessarily the play. Obviously, the lineage there with the McCaffreys is second to none. Well, maybe not. Brendan Rice is pretty good lineage as well. Marvin Harrison Jr. So I shouldn't say second to none. But again, another guy that comes from a football family that I think, like, all right, if you can get some of that playmaking that you're seeing out of his brother Christian, I know he's on another level. But, man, it's exciting to think about what that could look like.
One of my biggest critiques on Brandon Bean as a day three draft, and listen, he's hit probably more home runs on day three than he has on day one and two in terms of overall drafts. But when it comes to the wide receiver position, those late round picks, I think he gets too hung up with which of these guys can play special teams to get onto the field as a rookie or can contribute early on special teams and then maybe develop into a really good wide receiver down the road. I don't care enough about special teams. I know it's been important to this regime over the years, but when you're looking at wide receivers on day three, take the guy that you think you can develop into a playmaker. Even if he didn't play special teams in college, even if he's not going to play a snap of special teams as a rookie, if you think he has that skill set to eventually emerge into a playmaker for your offense, go and do that. You know, you mentioned Luke McCaffrey, Ryan Flournoy, I believe is the name of the receiver they brought in for a 30 visit, another day three guy that a lot of teams, there we go. That a lot of teams are kind of looking at. Pick guys that you think there's just something to their game where it's raw right now, but we can develop that and we can turn them into a playmaker. Special teams should be the last thing on their mind because they need to hit on that wide receiver position, especially if they're waiting for maybe that second, that double dip until day three. Get the guy that you think has the highest upside as a receiver and receiver only.
Listen, I got a bone to pick with you, fella. All right. So the Broncos put out new uniforms. Okay. New unis. Why don't you tell everybody what you tweeted about the new unis?
Let me look for the exact wording.
Yeah. I'd like you to quote it directly. Give us the full tweet.
I said, Broncos fans have been clamoring for the D, and they got it with Denver's latest throwbacks. The helmet has a big D on it.
That is a technical foul, sir.
Sizable D.
They've been waiting for the D.
They have been wanting the D in Denver.
They have been. Okay. Mm-hmm. Do you think that we could have worded that a little differently? Now looking back at it,
I see nothing wrong with what I wrote.
You see nothing wrong with what you wrote.
D on that helmet. You saw the horsepower on there. Bronco. You know, I didn't see anything wrong with the wording.
Okay, I'm clipping that out. Just the Bronco noise by itself is going to be gold. I agree. Perfect wording, Ryan. I agree with everybody in the comments. All right, hit that like button. Subscribe on YouTube. We're going to go through a couple more here, and then wrap this one up in a few minutes. Announcement time. We just locked in our next live show at Wingnuts. We have some stuff in the works. Also, we're going back to the Golf Dome on Whirly Drive, 2-9s. That is in the works as well. We don't have a date on that yet, but more to come there. We loved it so much. Over there, the guys over at 2-9s, the folks over there are just, they're awesome. They opened their doors, welcomed us with open arms. We had this amazing event. John Butler, former Bills DBs coach, came out. We had a great time, and we're headed back there. I mean, it's, I don't know about you, Ryan, but that was pretty fun.
It was an awesome time. And listen, a ton of people go there, so I shouldn't call it a hidden gem, but man, I had a blast with the technology that they had in the Golf Dome part of it after the show. The 2-9s is a beautiful bar and grill restaurant area. Weather's turning. I see they're getting the outdoor seats ready. I can't wait to get back.
Yeah, Justin, Robert, Chuck, the guys, so hospitable. We can't wait to get back up there and bring all of the Shaw fans. So stay tuned for that date. For Wingnuts, We are coming back on a special Friday night edition of Shout Live at Wingnuts. We're going to be there on Friday, May 17th, 6 p.m. It's a Friday night. Ryan is going to come right from school. It's going to be a mad dash to the Wingnuts. We're going to get after it. And I think that'll be right after Bill's rookie minicamp, hopefully that week.
Yeah.
So we'll obviously have a ton to get into, some post-draft content. Come on out. We usually get fans on the show. It's kind of become tradition now at Wingnuts. So it's a great time. Before and after the show, we're hanging out. We're eating wings. We're drinking beers. I'm back. I went through like a three-week little health issue there that couldn't eat wings and couldn't drink beer. But we're back, baby. I'm feeling pretty good. I cannot wait for these live shows coming up. We're going to get after it.
Yeah, always a great time. Always great. You know, the food's unbelievable there, but it seems like every show there's a new drink that you got to try or a new dessert on that menu. So always a great time at Wingnuts.
Alex Barber from the Insider chat line, or text line, and I should say, get that free trial right now. This is the 2 weeks to get it. I mean, you're going to get all the draft week coverage. Matt. What's that?
I'm seeing a little spike this week. Some new members chatting with them. It's been great. They know.
Yeah. Good time to join. I think a lot of it came after your Denver Broncos tweet. and so, yeah, this is the perfect time to get the 2 weeks free trial. And it's right the week of the draft and the week after the draft. We're going to be giving you all of our analysis right there. And Alex Barber, one of our insiders, if you want to become an insider, 716-528-6727. Text that number, become an insider. Send me all your questions. Send Ryan all your questions. We'll get after it in the text line. What about free agency? Alex Barber wants to know. Surely Brandon Bean isn't going to expect a rookie to take all of Diggs' targets. And I think this is an interesting question because notice that he said last week, and Adam from Facebook is chiming in here, guessing I missed the mock draft. We didn't do a mock draft. Ryan did a mock draft, and we talked a little bit about where his logic was. You can read that right now over at Syracuse.com. That is up on the site, and rewind to the beginning of the pod. We talked a little bit about that. My mock draft will be out either tomorrow or Wednesday, depending on the time. We have a bunch of shows, and then we're going to have one big live mock where we do it. I don't think there's going to be trades in that. I think we just go blow by blow. Messy. Yeah, it makes it messy. There's a follow-up there, but I'm going to leave it there. that's for the insider text line. So Brandon Bean said last week that when he was asked about wide receiver one, if the Bills see somebody that's a wide receiver one or wide receiver two, whether it be in the draft or free agency, he brought up, that the Bills will not hesitate to add that person if it makes sense for them. I mean, if you look at the free agent market right now, Ryan, Hunter Renfrow, Allen Robinson, Odell Beckham Jr., Michael Gallup, Tyler Boyd, Michael Thomas, Marquez Valdez-Scantling, DJ Chark, Mecole Hardman. There are still some names out there that I think, depending on how long we wait here, the numbers could be really good for a few of these guys. And maybe that's the way that the route that the Bills go to add somebody that makes them a little bit more comfortable going into training camp with a little bit more experience. I'm for the rookie route. I'm not advocating against that, but there's an option. There's another option there if they need it.
Whether it's wide receiver, and I know that's Alex's question, so I'll pivot back to that. Whether it's wide receiver or running back, because I had a lot of Bills fans say, well, what about a running back in this draft? I did not end up taking one. There's going to be a player in free agency that you can supplement in if you miss a player or position in this draft. If you wanted to double dip at receiver, but you can only get one because of the way the draft board fell. If you don't get running back, there's a Zeke Elliott that can be your short yardage back for a year, and you can go back to the drawing board to find that complement for James Cook the following year in the draft. At wide receiver, you listed a lot of those names, DJ Chark being a former 30 visit for the Bills. I believe they also met with him at the combine the year he came out. They did their homework on him, their due diligence. So if he's, you know, if they miss out on a second wide receiver, I could see them circling back to whatever, you know, the notes that they took on him in his interview and what they've seen from him early in his career. He played very well. The last few years have been somewhat quiet. Allen Robinson's a player that early in his career showed a lot of upside. Odell Beckham Jr., you know, Von Miller's still trying to probably bring him in because he promised it last year. There's a lot of guys out there still in free agency. And while I'm not sure you'd get wide receiver, you definitely want to get wide receiver one production from any of those players. You could still supplement them as a pseudo wide receiver two, wide receiver three. They can get 30, 40 catches, perhaps 300 to 500 yards, be a part of the offense. It's not flashy. It's not exciting, but it would still help supplement some of the loss from the Stephon Diggs trade while you add another rookie in there, while you expect Khalil Shakir to take the next step, Dalton Kincaid to get more looks his way in year two, James Cook show that he could be a factor in the passing game. So some of those targets are going to go to guys already on this roster. And if you do bring in a free agent post-draft, you know, just don't expect a, you know, gaudy stat lines, so to speak, from any of those players that you previously mentioned, but they could be a quality contributor.
One of our regulars in the insider text line, Tanya Molnar, says the Bills have 10 picks right now. How many total picks do you think they'll use? They'll actually make in the draft. And obviously with the deal that you made, they go from 10 down to 9. I might be even a little bit more aggressive and have them go down to 8 or 7, just because that limits the amount of people that you have to actually write up and talk about as we get into those later parts of the draft. But listen, I know that the Bills have more holes than usual, but I still think like the way that they kind of have found some gems in the UDFA ranks, like I think that there's value to going and bringing those guys in and maybe, you know, having a better chance of getting them on their practice squad. Cause you know, at this point, 6th and 7th round draft picks by the Bills, that they're immediately on team's radar. When you get to that 53 mm-hmm. cut down, if those guys hit the market, they're usually going somewhere else, as evidenced by last year with the kid from Alex Austin ends up starting in week 18 for the Patriots. You think about Jack Anderson a couple years ago, Nick Broker, the offensive lineman. It's like 6th and 7th round picks, they don't make that 53-man roster, they're gone. And I know there's going to be more like roster spots this year, but when you start adding up all those numbers, I mean, depending on how they were pretty, you know, they go back and look at free agency, they're going to add more free agents. I think by the time you get to the summer, there's going to be less roster spots available than you even think right now.
Yeah. And you know, to answer the question, I'll predict 7 or 8 picks. I could see Brandon Bean trading maybe some of the later picks in this year's draft for a pick in next year's draft. I know there are roster spots to fill, but there's only so many draftable players on your draft board. And when you get to those round 6, round 7 picks, he might not have anyone left that he necessarily covets. And there could be another team saying, well, we have a draftable grade on this guy. We'd like him. We can send another late day 3 pick in next year's draft. And maybe the draft class is deeper there. And, you know, we talked about this with the NIL and college sports. The talent pool in these draft classes are probably going to shrink each year into that 150, 160 range in terms of players with draftable grades. Players aren't necessarily coming out early anymore, especially guys that are projected to be day 3 picks, because they can make good money with these NIL deals in college, try to raise their stock on the football field the following season, then maybe come in as a mid-round pick. So it's great for these college athletes, but it also shrinks the pool in terms of the talent size in this year's draft. So wouldn't be shocked if some of those day 3 picks were traded away by Brandon Bean to see what's, you know, what next year looks like, or taking some of them together to try to move up and get one of their final players that they have a draft grade on. They have done a good job with UDFAs. There are more spots this year than in previous years, but I just don't see the Bills necessarily waiting around on with some of those later picks.
Last one here from Michael Miller, newish to the insider text line, lifelong Bills fan. Stay at number 28, draft Adonai Mitchell. He's an alpha that could turn into a CD Lamb type. I don't know if CD Lamb is the comp I would use for Mitchell, only because Lamb played, I think, much more out of the slot in college, and he has been slot heavy in that scheme. You know, Gallup's almost been more of the X there. And I think maybe, wasn't it, who was it before that? Amari Cooper kind of played that role too. And Lamb's kind of, he's more of that like flanker style that kind of moves all over the place, even though he is a bona fide number one. And he plays the boundary too. But I get what you're saying. I mean, the high end of things for Mitchell is high, like we talked about earlier in the show. Staff would have to tame him into being a good teammate though. I feel like he could have a great defense, but the Bills could have a great defense, but we always seem to come up short. So let's just go offense and focus on the on that more than anything. It's a passing league. Look forward to listening soon. Thank you, Michael, and welcome to the Insiders.
Yeah, thank you, Michael. Mitchell reminds, again, I said DK Metcalf in terms of the size, the freakish athleticism and speed. There's a lot to love about this player. And if the Bills look at him the same way that you do, Michael, I wouldn't be shocked if they stayed put at 28 or even tried to move up slightly to go get him.
All right. I think that's going to do it for this episode. I told Ryan we'd go like 30 minutes tonight. We're, of course, sitting here at 50 with a bullet. I'll give you the day off tomorrow, buddy. Come back on Wednesday. We'll get after it in a big way with the full live mock draft. Justin Mello from the Draft Network, Carl Jones from Rochester, and then Carl was on the show last year. He absolutely crushed it. I will link up with Antoine Staley tomorrow. You can watch that show. I think I'm going to stream it live at 11. If it doesn't stream live at 11, keep an eye on the YouTube page. I'll drop the podcast after the fact. I think we're going to stream it, though, so we'll see how it goes. Stay tuned. For Ryan Talbot, I'm Matt Perino. We will see you all week long. Remember, May 17th, 6 p.m., the next big Wingnuts event. We cannot wait. Stay tuned for more details on 2-9s. Take care, everybody.